there's no place like home for the holidays. And no matter how far away you roam, if you pine for the sunshine of a friendly gaze, for the holidays you can.
Welcome back to Horror for the Holidays, a Christmas horror movie podcast. I'm Jay Logsdon.
And I'm Jeff Searcy.
And Jeff, happy birthday Christmas.
Happy birthday Christmas indeed.
Spread a little Jesus.
Yes. Hold on to my hand, Jay.
Something, you'll become a man yes. soon or something. I don't know.
Why do you have to cry to become a man, Jay?
And Jeff, let the midnight special shine its light on me.
Indeed.
And also, I don't know, something that's kind of like a French, I think it was even like English, but it was a, I don't know, some kind of version of Eye of the Tiger, but it's also Christmas in some way.
Yes, somehow. Yes.
It sounded like Eye of the Tiger, but it might have had Christmas themed lyrics. It was hard to hear.
It was very hard to make out, but I think you're right.
I was literally sitting there, I'm like, is this Eye of the Tiger? And then he starts singing. I'm like, no, I think he's singing about Christmas. I'm like, at first I was like, is it a French version of Eye of the Tiger? No, I'm pretty sure he's singing about Christmas. All that to say, we're talking about, this week we're talking about one of Jeff and my favorite movies. A little 1990s Deadly Games.
A.K.A. Dial Code Santa Claus.
A.K.A. Game Over.
Dun, dun, dun.
A.K.A. Hide and Freak, a.k.a. 3615 Code Père Noël.
Of course, yes.
I think that's all of them.
Okay, good. I was wondering how long you're going to keep going with this.
It could also be 3615 Code Santa Claus or something. But okay. Père Noël, Santa Claus, whatever. Anyway, released January 17th, 1990. And might I say, potentially a more 90s movie doesn't exist.
Yeah, it would be tough. Very tough to find one.
It's very 90s without being... It feels very 90s without having anything that like explicitly, I think, says this is the 90s.
You could tell it's definitely... If you just glance at this movie, you'd know it's definitely late 80s, early 90s.
Yep.
You're looking at it.
Written and directed by Rene Manzoor. He was also the writer of Highlander, The Final Destination. Final Dimension, sorry. Uncredited. And directed episodes of the Highlander TV show.
Nice. Solid TV show.
And I know how much you love Highlander.
I do. I love Highlander.
Especially the Kurgan.
Yes. Mr. Kurgan.
Yep.
God, I love Clancy Brown. He needs to be in more things.
I forget it's better to... Mr. SpongeBob, I've got something to say. It's better to fade out than to burn out than to fade away.
Indeed.
Mr. Squidward.
Indeed.
Bridget Fosse plays Julie. We'll probably refer to her as Mom for most of our movie. Yeah,
might as well.
Luis Ducreux plays Pappy. We'll refer to him as Grandpa for most of the movie.
We're doing Grandpa.
Alan LaLaine plays Thomas and is now a VFX producer with some big credits to his name. The Avatar movies, or at least one of the Avatar movies.
Wow.
Meg 2. I think there was even maybe a Marvel movie on the list.
Wow.
Way to really transition from being in maybe one of the greatest Killer Santa movies of all time to a pretty solid VFX career.
His career's only going up.
Yep. Patrick Florsheim plays Santa Claus.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then there's other people, but they're less important. No, also, cares. Because IMDb is like able to be edited by anyone who uses IMDb, as I'm sure you know and have found out.
Yes, I do.
The dog has two credits. One is this movie from 1990, and I clicked and I was like, well, that doesn't seem right. There's a movie that lists him in something that's like in the 2020s. And I'm like that dog would be long dead by now.
Mm-hmm.
And then I clicked on it. No, I'm pretty sure there is a gay porn actor with the same name as the dog.
Ah.
But that got credited on the IMDb page.
Why am I not surprised, Jay?
to the dog not and not, surprised? Not to the porno actor. So that was pretty exciting.
Rip JR.
Hero dog. I don't know. Do we want to get the big controversy out of the way?
I mean, we might as well.
Rene Manzoor claims that Halloween ripped off this movie.
Yeah.
Hey, listener. Editor Jay here. I meant to say Home Alone. I don't know why I said Halloween, other than the spooktacular being on the brain. And if you were listening along, like, what does a movie that came out before this have to do with being sued over? I meant Home Alone. Sorry for any confusion that may have caused. Anyway, take it away, Jeff and Jay from the past. And, I mean, it kind of did.
Eh, yeah.
Like, not, it's not beat for beat. It's not like a, you know, like a shot for shot remake or anything like that. But kid left alone, home invader, Christmas time, mom rushes to get back and is constantly getting stopped by weird things.
Yes.
All right, I guess in this movie it's more just driving into a tree or whatever.
It's very Home Alone, I will say. If not directly ripped off, I would say heavily inspired by.
Yep. I don't think there's any grounds to like sue over this, which I think Rene Manzoor tried to do, maybe.
No, we'll see. It's not close enough for any kind of lawsuit or anything to go through. I mean, honestly, if you look at it, it's like I said, similar, but not. It's not beat for beat. It's not. It's a completely different concept. But I could totally see, you know, like watching this movie and then being like, hey, I bet I could make an Americanized version of this,
right?
Of course, you know, American audiences are too wimpy, Jay, for somebody to be trying to kill a kid. So he gets left home alone by accident.
Yeah, they hate Halloween 3. American audiences.
For some reason. Yeah. I don't understand.
And tons of kids die in that movie.
Well, and it highlights one of America's chief villains, as I've said in the past, Jay.
The Irish.
Yeah.
This highlights another chief villain, the French.
Yes. Oh, God.
According to Matt DuPay's book, Scary Little Christmas, a $3 million budget. And it is impressive what $3 million could get you in 1990.
$3 million French dollars.
Yeah. I don't know. What's that? Like a croque madame and a, and a baguette?
I'm pretty sure one franc equals one baguette.
Yes. Where to watch? Currently, not really many places.
No, for whatever reason, even though it is popular within the horror community and it's had restorations and English translation subtitlings and everything, it's not seem to be very popular like on streaming or anything.
It was on Shudder for a very, very long time. I was like, oh, that'll be easy. Just load up Shudder. And I went to go watch the movie on Shudder and I'm looking around. I can't find it anywhere. And I was like, well, good thing I have a DVD copy from Vinegar Syndrome. So if you want to watch it, buy a DVD copy from Vinegar Syndrome.
Yes, that's what I did as well. And I just want to call out John Hughes, if you're listening, we know what you did.
We know you saw this movie.
We know you did it. You saw it and you were like, oh, no one will care in America because it's French. I'll just rip it off.
And sure, people love all the people in that movie. Daniel Stern.
Yes. I mean,
what, Joe Pesci?
Yes.
People love those guys.
Baron, nobody look at the fact that it's a completely different plot, but whatever.
But it's the same.
It's a kid left at home and he does traps, Jay. He does traps.
And his grandpa needs insulin. Oh, no, that's just this movie. His old diabetic grandpa.
Now, you see, this movie would be less scary if it was the same situation as Home Alone, because if Crazy Santa was trying to rob the house of something specific and then leave, that would be one thing. But he's playing some kind of sick weirdo game with this kid.
Yep.
And of course, it's French, so there's got to be weird sexual undertones to everything too. Disgusting people over there.
All right, Jeff, your personal experience. I mean, I know what your personal experience with this movie is, and I think listeners to Stocking Stuffers know, but
yes. Well, I mean, we've done this. This is one of the rare movies, Jay, that we've done on another show before our own.
Yep. We did an episode of Totally Rad Christmas.
Yes.
Talking about this amazing movie. Stocking Stuffer wise, 2 years ago at Christmas time, Jeff and I went and saw this at a local theater.
We actually drug our disgusting old bodies out into public to watch this movie.
People were offended, horrified just to see us in person. I had actually seen this. I'd watched this once on Shudder. I think it was peak pandemic time when you know there was no one at our job.
That's a good time.
And it was just kind of like, So I think I was like, well, I should probably go into work at some point, and I put this on instead. And then I was like, all right, I guess I'll go in now. I don't think they have anything. And they didn't. It was like a Tuesday. Had nothing to do.
Typical.
But loved it. Loved it then. Loved it when we saw it for in theaters. Loved it when we talked about it with Jerry D for Totally Rad Christmas. Loved it this time. I'm not gonna hide my love for this movie behind some kind of final rating.
Rene Manzor, also fun fact, is the brother of a famous French pop star who did contribute music to the movie.
Oh, was it the weird Christmas Eye of the Tiger song?
It might have been, actually. He was, I mean, that would have been popular music at the time, so.
Or maybe, or, you know, also could have just been, yeah, like, the regular music in the movie, like, the, more like, the atmospheric music.
Could have been.
All right, well, you ready to dive into the synopsis, Jeff?
We better.
All right. We start with a quote from Bruno Bettelheim about how all children love the magic of Christmas, except those that have been disappointed by Christmas.
Dun, dun, dun.
Something like that. It was written in French. I didn't want to write all the words down.
La France.
We see a snow globe with the Eiffel Tower in it to let us know that this is France.
Of course.
And then, the title card, Deadly Games. Or 3615 Père Noël or whatever. And then we see a garbage truck tire smash the snow globe.
Classic.
A bunch of kids are having a snowball fight in the middle of the street, and then we see a grown man walk up, and he tries to get involved, but all the kids turn around and run away because a creepy grown man was getting involved in their snowball fight.
What? This, you know what? We need to just praise this actor right out of the gate. What a fucking creep.
He looks like a creep.
What a good creep for a movie.
We cut to this lavish mansion in the countryside of France, I'm sure.
Yes.
No. It is. And we see Thomas asleep in like a plane cockpit, and he wakes up, and we get a montage of him like dressing like Rambo with this Christmassy version of Eye of the Tiger playing, while he also like chases his dog JR around the house. Jair,
why must you die?
Thomas has all sorts of toys, and he kind of has like free run of the whole like castle to himself. His mom owns Princeps or something like that.
Basically, think like if you're an American, like Macy's,
yeah,
a big department
store. She owns the entire department store. He jumps on his grandpa, who just stays sleeping in the bed that he's in, and then chases JR around the house and traps him in like a trap door, like in the hallway.
Yes. Foreshadowing.
Thomas is told to wake his grandpa up for breakfast by his mom, and we see him like handcuff his grandpa to like walk him downstairs. Also, we see that he's some kind of like computer whiz who has kind of control of all the electronics in the house and all these cameras and whatnot.
He's a hacker, Jay.
Like I said, he pretends to arrest his grandpa, and we learn that his grandpa is diabetic and near blind.
Yes.
They all eat breakfast, and Thomas's mom leaves to run Princeps. Yeah, that's kind of what she gets up to for most of the movie.
Yes.
Is either going to work, being at work, or coming home from work.
Yes. And when she's home, she talks about how she has to go back to work.
At work, Julie tells her employees that they need to hire more Santas for the store.
We need more Santas.
We don't have enough Santas.
Get me pictures of Santa Claus.
Back at home, Thomas's friend Pilou stops by, and Thomas uses some kind of like a rudimentary form of the internet. Think like War Games, if you've seen that.
Yes.
To talk with someone who's claiming to be Santa Claus. And when the person asks him, like, where do you live or something like that, Thomas says, you should already know, but you can get my list of presents from my mom. She runs Printemps, the department store. And then we see the person on the other end of the line was the grown man from the snowball fight.
Dun, dun, dun.
That man goes to Printemps and applies to be Santa, one of the Santa Clauses that we need for the store.
Yeah, we need him.
Back at the house, Thomas works on his mom's old car and gets it running, and Grandpa lets Thomas then drive around the yard.
Why not, Jay? Why not?
We then see Thomas working on a computer system to trap Santa or like get pictures of him so he can prove that he exists because Pilou doesn't believe that Santa is real.
I need pictures of Spider-Man. I mean Santa Claus.
I need to prove that fat fuck Pilou wrong.
Fucking fat bastard. Useless motherfucker.
Can't even ride a bicycle.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Santa is at Printip's. Having kind of a great time. He's interacting with all the kids. Yeah. And then this little girl comes up and says, "I don't like your face," and pulls off his beard. Santa slaps her, and Julie sees this. Julie, the mom, sees this and fires Santa on the spot. When Santa gets sent to the personnel office, he overhears that Thomas's toys are being loaded into a truck, and he heads down to the dock that it's being loaded into.
I just want to say that little girl had it coming.
No,
he shouldn't have been fired.
No, she was real, and then she lies.
Yes.
We see Thomas and his grandpa playing D&D.
Yes.
And we learn that they've been playing this campaign for 2 years, and grandpa just got to level 2.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if that's a skill issue on Grandpa's part or if Thomas isn't a good DM, but it feels like there's something wrong somewhere.
That's got to be a combination of both. But in a little bit of a foreshadow, there's some blindness issues going on, and they're facing a troll. So
yep.
we'll come back to that later.
Thomas, Grandpa, and JR, the dog, all go to bed.
Yes, of course.
The truck arrives on the property at the house, and Santa strangles the driver when he comes around and opens the back door.
Nice.
Thomas sneaks out of his room and hides under there's the dining room, and the chimney is in the dining room, and he hides under the dining room table so that he can watch the fireplace for when Santa shows up.
Oh, and boy, does he show up, Jay, in weird, filtery, weird sparkle.
Thomas's mom calls and tells him that if Santa arrives and sees him awake, that Santa will be angry and turn into an ogre. Santa, we can assume at this point, which it's then verified later, murders like the two groundskeepers because they were also...
Yes, they were going to come out and help with the packages.
And he uses their canned snow to dye his hair and beard white. And then he sits in their house and waits until close to midnight.
What a freak.
He then climbs down the chimney, and Thomas kind of wakes up under the table and sees this. And at first, like you said, Jeff, it's all sparkly and hazy and all beautiful. And he's all excited because, he has this proof that Santa's there. Mm-hmm. And then JR runs out, attacks Santa, who grabs a knife from the table and stabs the dog, killing it. R.I.P. JR.
Rest in peace. He'll get a funeral, though. Don't worry.
And then Santa looks under the table and still holding the bloody knife and says, "Thomas?" Mm-hmm. And then Thomas runs away and Santa chases after him.
Dun, dun, dun.
Thomas wakes up Grandpa and blocks the door, but Santa's able to just burst through it like it's nothing.
Of course.
Even though it's this giant mansion house.
Yes, with a heavy old wood door. Yeah.
They escape out a window and then they hide in one of Thomas's weird secret room, toy rooms.
Basically, his father is dead, which is established early on, and it's he apparently used to play with his dad in all these hidden crawl spaces and servant walkways for this ancient manor house. So he's got a pretty good idea of basically how to get around without being seen.
But also, this room specifically is filled with generation upon generation of toys.
Yes. Of course, we got dumbass grandpa bumbling along, fucking everything up.
They are able to kind of sneak their way through the house because Thomas realizes we could get to the car in the garage because they've got it running earlier.
Yep.
And they get inside and the car won't start. And Thomas keeps and he's finally able to get it start. And we see Santa step out in front of the car. And so Grandpa's close. Yelling to step
run his on the ass gas. Over, run him over.
And Thomas can't bring himself to do it. And then Santa gets closer and starts attacking the car, first headbutting the windshield, which causes the windshield to crack, and Santa just starts bleeding from his forehead.
You think how much pain would have been saved if he just ran him over?
And then he attacks the car with a sledgehammer, and Thomas and Grandpa are eventually able to escape, and they hide back in the room they were hiding in earlier. Thomas and Grandpa hear the phone ringing in the mom's office, and Thomas gives Grandpa a walkie-talkie so they can stay in communication while he tries to get to the phone using all the cameras and stuff in the house on his little remote control wristband.
What were those things called? It was the little portable Nintendo system.
It's like the Power Glove.
Yes. Yeah. It's basically like a Power Glove fused with like one of those old sets of VR goggles.
Thomas sneaks through the house using the cameras to keep track of where Santa is, but Santa notices the cameras and starts smashing them.
Smart Santa.
Santa finds Thomas in a hallway, and Thomas triggers like the emergency doors, like the big metal steel doors, like over all the windows and doors to like slide down. And then as Santa gets close, he uses the same trap that he used on JR earlier in the movie to trap Santa.
Rest in peace, JR.
Thomas then runs through this weird like art maze in the house, which it's like it's a hallway. It's a bunch of hallways with like artwork hanging in them. But then you also see the scene from above, and there is also a piece of artwork on the floor. Thomas gets through it, gets up to Julie's office, opens the door, runs to the phone just for Santa to have beaten him there. Santa had to climb out of the trap door, figure out his way through the maze faster than Thomas.
Yes. This is the one part of the movie where I'm like, how the hell did that even happen?
And he picks up the phone and he goes, "Do you want me to dial it for you, Thomas?" Thomas then Thomas is cornered by Santa. And he gets backed into a window where Thomas escapes out on the window onto the roof. And we see him kind of climbing. And then we get this aerial shot of the roof. But it's actually, I believe, a model. And then we cut back to like Thomas standing on the roof. And he screams for his mom. Julie and her boyfriend Roland's car tries using the car phone. But no one answers at the house. So she continues to try to speed home. Like I said, it will either be going to work, being at work, or coming home from work for most of the time for Julie.
Yes, and unfortunately for her, she did not run into John Candy.
From the roof, Thomas sees the groundskeeper's house, but that no one is inside.
Dun, dun, dun. And that's important because he knows there's a stash of insulin out there.
Yep. Thomas is able to sneak inside like an attic room where there is like this master computer, and he messages Roland at first, who doesn't see the message at all, and then he messages Pilou, who sees it and decides to come help.
Oh god, just tell somebody.
Sorry, help.
Yeah, tell somebody. You fat bastard.
Santa finds the secret toy room and stalks his way towards Grandpa, but Thomas is able to rescue Grandpa at the last second.
Nice.
They hide, but Santa can hear them. They're hiding in the sauna. But when he gets inside, he sees that it's just the walkie-talkie.
Ah, tricked.
And Thomas rolls out from like a rolled-up carpet.
Of course.
And traps Santa inside the sauna and then turns the heat all the way up.
Yeah.
Thomas and Grandpa go to escape, but Thomas had turned all the security doors on, and the arm pad is now broken, so he can't open them.
Oh, no.
So he's going to have to like emergency open them because he has access to welding gear.
Gotta hit the emergency override. What's that? I weld it.
Julie calls Roland from the car phone, and Roland says he'll call the cops. Now, if this were a modern movie, Roland would be in on it, right? Like,
100%. Yeah.
My modern sensibilities were like, oh, he's 100. Like the first time I watched this, I'm like, he's 100% in on it. But I'm like, oh no, this is a 90s movie. They're playing it very straight.
Yes, he's actually just genuinely helpful. But yeah, no, you're right. If this came out like tomorrow, it would be him. Somehow he was in a plot with the crazy Santa. He was like, once she dies, I'll be able to take her spot.
Yep.
You know, she can't resist rushing home to save her son, and then you can kill them both.
And maybe, like, the crazy Santa's, like, his deranged brother.
Yeah, something.
Anyway, it's good thing this isn't a modern movie.
Yes.
Roland then sees the computer message this time and calls the cops. Pilou arrives on his bike as Thomas says he is going to get help and Grandpa needs to hide. But also, Santa has escaped from the sauna, and when Thomas gets the security doors open and runs downstairs, Santa trips him and stabs him in the side just as Pilou walks through the front door.
Nice.
Santa sees this and chases after Pilou, who's on his bike, falls off it, I think, at least twice.
God, you know what? You give fat kids a bad name, you bastard.
And he's like, I get that he's a child on a bike. A kid on a bike could probably move faster than a grown adult running through snow.
Possibly.
You'd think? No, he barely stays ahead of him.
We mean within an inch of being grabbed.
Like, Santa's literally got his hand outstretched, if it wasn't for, like, a car that, like, speeds by right at that second.
And bear in mind that the entire thrust of their earlier conversation, Thomas and his conversation, is that, you know, Thomas is a dreamer, idiot, or whatever. Pelu is, you know, a realist, a pragmatist. He doesn't believe in Santa Claus, because that's dumb. And out of all the things he could do to quote-unquote help, he decides to go there himself. A little fat, like, fucking 8-year-old or whatever. Like, what the fuck does he think he's gonna do?
Like a real The Rizzler.
It's like, call the police and then try to escape on your bike and fail at it almost so badly you die too. Gee, thanks.
And then he never comes back.
No.
You would think, like, oh, yes, maybe Pelu escapes, is able to call the cops, tells his parents they're able to call the cops.
Never.
No. You never see him again. What a fucking piece of shit friend.
What a useless character and a piece of shit friend. He talked a big game, Jay, about how, you know, he was a smart kid and he's above this kind of stupid, petty shit.
I think he even drops the R slur.
Oh, yeah.
Like, multiple times towards Thomas.
You know he does. Oh, you know that's in there. This is back when you could still be spicy in movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Grandpa, from his hiding place inside a suit of armor, talks to Thomas, but Thomas tells him to stay hidden.
I need my insulin, but it's fine, Thomas. Just leave me. I'll die.
Thomas gets on the speakers and threatens Santa that he will make him sorry
scared. One of the best speeches, I think, from a kid in a movie.
Yeah. We get a montage of Thomas, like, stitching himself up, burying JR, and making weapons.
And traps.
Over as Bonnie Tyler sings, "Happy Birthday, Christmas.
Spread a little Jesus.
Something, something, something. Become a man." Rene Manzor, I believe, also directed that music video.
I can believe it.
I assume that's the only reason that song is in this movie.
Talk about a great Christmas song I didn't know about until 2 years ago. And now my wife hates it so much. The other day, because I remembered we were doing this and rewatched it. And as soon as she heard Merry, Merry Christmas come out of my office, she was like, "No, it's too early."
Become a man. We need to figure out how to make Bonnie Tyler's Merry Christmas into, like, the Whamageddon for Horror for the Holidays.
We need it.
I don't know what we're Bonnie Tyler getting. I don't know. We need to workshop that.
Bonnageddon.
And if you hear Merry Christmas, which doesn't get airplay, so you really don't have to work. You have to be working purposely trying to listen to the song.
It's like another little known track. I think maybe we should mention, Jay, give a little plug to our buddy Leo Carpazzi.
my buddy Zach, I had posted, I basically, you know, the second Christmas music comes on, I start listening to it. And so, like, December 1st, Last Christmas comes on by Wham. So I posted, like, all right, I'm out of Whamageddon. Like, you know, I really don't care. I'm not purposely trying to avoid it. In fact, I kind of enjoy Last Christmas as a song. I think Wham gets a bad rap. But my buddy Zach posted, "Oh no, as soon as I heard about it, I went and listened to it." He's like, "Because that's too much pressure to try to avoid the song."
I mean, that's a good point.
Thomas shoots some, like, rocks with a slingshot at Santa, and then the third rock actually has like a tracking device on it that attaches with some Velcro to Santa's suit.
Yeah.
Thomas then escapes through a dumbwaiter. He then sets a trap with some darts, and as Santa steps through, he gets shot with crossbow like darts in his neck.
Yeah, my ass.
We then see Thomas pouring a bunch of, like, gasoline on the ground, and when Santa, like, steps in the area where the gasoline is, he lights a toy gun, like, dart on fire and shoots it, which then causes Santa to, like, go up in flames.
God, you know, see, if that had been the way he'd actually just killed Santa right at that moment, that would have been, like, a I would have never watched any other movie again.
Thomas then makes an explosive with like a toy train and like a little toy grenade and marbles for shrapnel and like firework powder in it. Mm-hmm. And he winds up like the toy train so it starts moving, playing Happy Birthday Christmas. I don't know if you noticed that.
I did notice that.
And it slowly starts making its way towards Santa, but it stops short. Santa picks up the toy,
winds it,
sends it back. Yep, it passes Thomas and is headed straight for the suit of armor.
Not Grandpa.
So Thomas jumps out of his hiding spot to run to save Grandpa, but Santa catches him, and the train hits the suit of armor, but then doesn't go off.
And this is where we get our biggest twist in this entire movie. It makes you doubt everything that happens in this movie. Because Santa has him caught, dead to rights, is a psycho killer. And I'll let Jay, you can tell him what happens next.
And then, what, is this the moment where he says, I caught you, now it's your turn, or something like that?
Now it's my turn to hide, and then he leaves him and goes off to hide in the house.
Yep.
Like they were playing a game this entire time.
Count to 20. he's like, count to 20, no cheating.
Yes, this is when you realize that, no, this guy is not like he's not like your Michael Myers or your Jason or whatever, like a slasher. No, he's legitimately an insane person.
Roland gets to Julie and picks her up in a spare car. The cops arrive as Midnight Special starts playing on the radio in the cop's car.
Cop with good taste.
The Midnight Special.
Must be a French cop thing.
Thomas is able to talk to Grandpa. But Grandpa says he needs his insulin.
I need it.
And we see Santa sneak up behind the cop and murder him. We assume murder him, but he does murder him.
Yeah.
Thomas looks for the insulin and then notices that the tracking device is getting closer and closer. He finally notices this and turns around, but it was just on a toy tank.
Santa's more clever than we thought.
Thomas runs to the groundskeeper house. Past the bodies of the dead groundskeepers. He gets the insulin and gets in the police car that's still turned on. It starts driving towards the house, calling for help on the police shortwave radio. And then Santa pops out of the back seat and says, "You're cheating," which startles Thomas, who crashes into a tree.
Oof. Just a side note, RIP to the groundskeepers. Can you imagine being essentially slaves to this rich family, having to work on Christmas Eve instead of being home with your family, and then getting murdered for it?
Getting murdered by a psycho Santa.
Oh my God.
Thomas escapes from the police car, and Santa chases him down. Thomas trips over the dead cop's body and grabs a service revolver as, like, kind of Santa cautiously walks towards him as Thomas is kind of shaking, and then he kind of puts the gun down because he doesn't think he can do it. Santa takes one more step, and Thomas shoots.
Good on you, kid.
We then see Thomas arrive into the house. He frees Grandpa from the suit of armor and gives him the insulin shot. And at first he thinks maybe Grandpa's died.
Might be too late.
But Grandpa slowly starts moving again. But then that's when Santa appears in the doorway, all caked in mud and shit, and burned alive.
He's a true ogre now.
Grandpa grabs the gun, but remember,
Grandpa's blind.
He's blind, so he can't really see. So he tells Thomas to get down. We hear the gunshot go off, and we hear Thomas scream, "No!" We hear a bunch of stuff from earlier in the movie talking about how, you know, Santa is an ogre if he sees a kid awake, and whether Santa's real or not, and other shit like that. As Julian and Roland walk in, and they see Thomas, like, shaking, standing over Santa's dead body.
Dun, dun, dun.
Julie picks up her son, and she's like, "It's okay, Thomas, it's over." And Thomas is like, "It's my fault that Santa's dead.
I just wanted to see Santa."
And he cries, and then the camera slowly pans over Santa's dead body to the chimney as Bonnie Tyler once again sings Happy Birthday
Merry Christmas.
End of movie. Credits roll.
God, what a movie. What an ending, too. So very rarely do horror movies stick the ending without some kind of like, "Oh, look, the killer's still alive" thing. Nope, just ends on the perfect note.
Yep.
This kid is like psychologically broken and traumatized for the rest of his life. Santa's dead. Grandpa's still diabetic and blind.
And I think one thing I skipped over, Julie like says a thing about wanting to like keep the Christmas spirit alive in Thomas's heart. Like, Thomas didn't know that Santa wasn't real till like he was 11 or something like that. Mm. So I'm going to make sure that like Thomas makes it. So we learn Thomas is 10. She's like, I'm going to make sure Thomas is, you know, gets to 11 before I tell him that Santa's not real.
Yeah.
And, you know, instead of just being like, Santa's not real, she now has to deal with her traumatized son.
Who I mean, how do you even get over something like that? Especially at that, because see, if he had been younger, he would have forgot about it probably. But, or if he had been older, he would have been better equipped to handle it. But he's, like, at the exact worst age for something like this to happen.
And she, like, she blatantly, like, encourages it because she also, like, pushes him to, like, because Thomas is like, oh, Pilou doesn't think, mm-hmm. you know, Santa's real. She's like, essentially, she's like, Pilou's a piece of yeah, shit. Exactly, he's yeah. a terrible child.
Like, yeah, well, Pilou's a fat piece of shit. So
Santa doesn't visit bad kids like Pilou. He only visits good kids.
doesn't visit poor kids. They can't afford to bring an entire van full of presents.
And so it's a really, that's like a really, like, but you know, she, like I said, she kind of encourages this whole thing instead mm-hmm. of being like, you know, maybe that was her opportunity to, oh, maybe my son won't be mentally scarred for the rest of his life. Jeff, this is how you get like a Billy mm-hmm. or a, like this is like a Billy or a or I mean, Harry this, Standling like the origin story.
This is a Michael Myers event. Like this scarring around a specific holiday could get us our Christmas slasher yeah. out of this.
Yeah, do you want a Michael? This is how you get a Michael. Yes.
You know, honestly, this is one of the few movies I could say I wish I would have seen a sequel where he's grown up or whatever, and maybe he takes on the mantle of being a psycho Santa.
I wonder, like, I think this movie's perfect. I don't think you do that, but yeah. like, it is one of those things where it's like they could do something yeah, yeah. with that.
It'll never see. This is why movies that actually could have a good sequels never get made. Movies that absolutely don't need a sequel, the whole idea was covered in the movie. They get like four or five sequels.
Yep. All right, Jeff, well, which category do you want to start with?
Christmas spirit. I'm just going to say it right now. Off the charts.
How Christmassy is the movie? How Christmassy are the kills? Very 90s, late 80s, early 90s Christmas. Like, and I would say probably very French Christmas. There's snow on the ground. Yes. You get Christmas lights. You get Christmas trees. You get, you have a Santa running around. You
get Christmas music.
Yep. Like, it, you know, once again, it's not at a, like a 2006 Black yes. Christmas or like a Krampus oh. or a level, but like... It is high and for this movie.
The entire plot also revolves around Christmas, which is always good.
Yep. Kills killer Santa.
I mean, yeah, it's Santa killing people and doing it in creative ways.
Yep. Like yeah. it's not the most Christmassy kills, but it's Père Noël running around murdering it's people and dogs.
Possibly one of the most brutal dog kills I've ever seen in a movie.
Like it's because it's not even like it's like a dull knife. Yeah, it's almost like a cheese knife or something. Yeah,
I think it's a cake serving knife where you're meant to like slice it or whatever and then put the cake slice up on your like wide knife.
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
So it's like it would be horrible. And the strength too to shove that through a dog's skull.
Also the fact that he's able to climb through it's this giant house and he's able to both climb up the roof and then come down this massive chimney with yes. like a rope.
And so fast too.
Yep, very impressive.
Yeah.
Let's do Christmas Carol favorite quotes.
Well, it's a little hard since it's all in French.
There are a lot of good quotes, because it's in French, because it's got the subtitles, yes, it makes it a little harder.
Yes, we don't have the exact quotes, probably.
But the two I was able to get pretty much word for word are, I caught this half-blind diabetic prisoner, no big deal, that's Thomas. And then Julie says, it's your grandfather, a little respect, please. And then the other one is, you know, Grandpa, I wonder Santa really exists, and Napoleon, and cavemen, and all that.
Yeah. You know, mythical figures.
Napoleon and the cavemen.
I mean, Jay still thinks Napoleon is real.
What? Wait, what? No, not nothing.
Oh, let me see. I pull up my... Is that all you had?
Those were the two I... Like I said, those were the two I kind of got word for word. But there's a lot of weird quotes. And of course, Happy Birthday Christmas.
Oh, yeah. I'd say the entire Bonnie Tyler song, of course, to quote that. This is the mom and grandpa talking. He's like, must you really work on Christmas? Because obviously they're insanely wealthy. And she's like, yes, if I'm not there, nothing will work. And he kind of rolls his eyes at her. It's like, yeah, typical rich lady.
Yep.
Oh, yes. I'm sure the department store can't possibly run without you, so you could spend Christmas Eve with your son.
Oh, no. And then Roland, like, tells her to go home at one point. And she's like, no, I have to get the files in. And it's like, go be home with your family. Like,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, what a movie.
What was it? Oh, there it was. Yes, his speech, but the one line I pulled out of it as, and even though you're Santa Claus, I swear you're going to be scared.
Yep.
Yes.
No, I did like that line.
I like that line. I thought that would be a good poster line.
The whole speech is really good, too, because yeah. It's like, he's like, you know, yeah, you've it's something along the lines of, like, you've invaded my house, but you don't know your way around my house like I do, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, I'm going to make you scared.
Yeah. But no, basically, if you want a good quote from this movie, quote the entire thing.
Yep, start to finish. Mm. All right, so starting, it starts off with the quote from the French guy.
Yeah. A quote from a French guy in a French movie? Crazy.
All right, Christmas wrapping, sets, costumes, etc. I think the mansion setting is awesome.
Yes.
I think the set pieces that they used, I think the miniature mansion that they used for like those aerial shots.
Very well done.
All looks great. I think our Santa looks very creepy and menacing. You know, it's one of those where, like, you know, we just finished with Good Tidings, who are very creepy, like, kind of scary, like, terrifying Santas. This one is just more, like, menacing, yes. I think is the way I would say it.
Menacing, and just, you could tell by the look on his face that he is unhinged.
And then my last thing for Christmas wrapping, the soundtrack's nuts. What are these songs doing? I'm going to bring this up again. What are these songs doing in this movie?
You ask that, and yet it works perfectly. The soundtrack never makes you like pulled out of the movie. It just adds to the craziness.
I mean, that's a good way to look at it.
Because, I mean, even before the soundtrack goes crazy, we've already had, you know, a kid seemingly cosplaying as Rambo with unlimited money in a mansion in the weird French Riviera. Essentially capturing his blind grandpa and escorting him to breakfast.
Playing D&D poorly.
Yes, playing D&D, yes, only getting to level 2 after 2 years of campaigning.
Once again, who's at fault here? Is it?
I mean, ultimately, you got to lay that on Thomas. You can't put that on the player.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, the DM's clearly being stingy with the experience. Mm-hmm. All right. Do you have anything else for Christmas wrapping?
I mean, we talked about the Santa Claus suit. I mean, I'm sure it's probably a standard one for France, but because it looks different than the American Santa Claus suit, I think it kind of adds something for American viewers.
Yeah, listeners, you know, if you're thinking like traditional Santa Claus, this isn't really that. It's like an all red suit. The boots are like red leather,
yep.
And they have like the white kind of cuffs. And then I think maybe his shirt has maybe like cuffs or like whatever, like kind of jacket he's wearing, and then instead of like a hat, it's almost like he's wearing like a red fur lined like Santa like cloak.
Yeah, almost like, yeah, as I say, it was much more like pagan Santa than what we think of. But yeah, I'm not completely sure if that's the standard Santa costume over there or not, but I thought it was interesting to see a different variation on the Santa costume.
No, I agree.
I used to.
I was kind of sitting there, and I, you know, it's a foreign film. It's probably made about this. I don't remember when The Day of the Beast came out.
Probably around that
time. Probably right around the same time. And I was like, for like as much as we loved Day of the Beast, like certainly not the most Christmassy movie.
No.
And then you put this and it's like it's night and day almost.
Day of the Beast was 95.
Okay, so yeah, right around the same time. Same
kind of window, yeah.
But yeah, like this is, you know, this is perfectly Christmas in just about every single way. And then Day of the Beast like has a handful of things that are like,
yes,
that's Christmas adjacent.
Yes, well, what really saved Day of the Beast was that huge Christmas parade.
Yep.
Because if it didn't have that, yeah, it would have been pretty low on Christmas.
No, that's the exact scene I was thinking of. But you think more, this Santa would fit more in like at that Christmas parade with the three wise men and stuff like that.
But yeah, I mean, he talked about the house. I thought it was cool to see police car was interesting interior. I guess that's probably standard for France, but I was like, this looks like a very luxurious police car.
Also, there's no like barrier separating the back seat from the front seat.
I thought that was also really weird. Like, so you just put the criminal in the back seat and just like, all right, you stay back there now.
Yep. they're the French. Like, what, you know, what are they arresting people for? Like
stealing pies off windowsills.
I was gonna say eating too much cheese, drinking too much wine. Like, yeah, they don't have to worry about much.
Yeah, I'm guessing. Yeah, it's probably a lot of wine related crimes.
Oh, you said this was a Chateau Saint-Michel 1861, and it is in fact a Chateau Saint-Michel 1864. Oh, arrest this man.
And of course, Thomas's costume, awesome.
Yep.
Especially when he gears up later in the movie.
Oh, man, yeah. It's this kid with this great mullet, great, like, late 80s, early 90s mullet, and then just, like, dressed full Rambo gear.
Yes.
Oh, man. All right, well, Jeff, let's do Broken Bulb, Brilliant Bulb. One thing you want to fix, and then one thing you want to praise.
Oh, you know, I really struggled to find something I wanted to fix in this movie because I was like, it's pretty much perfect. What am I going to say? But honestly, I think maybe make it, I don't know, about 15 minutes longer and give us some more links between some of these scenes, because time seems to pass in this movie at a weird rate.
No, there are times where, like, I literally had to go, okay, Santa had Thomas cornered there. What happened? And yes, I had to rewind the movie multiple times to, like, figure out what happened, like, how Thomas got away.
So this is one of the rare examples of a movie, I think, where it was almost too tight in the runtime. I think it could have dealt at least, like, maybe 10 more minutes of, like, connecting scenes to some of these things to kind of show what's going on. Maybe show Santa getting around the house quickly in at least one scene, so you can kind of explain why he's doing that, like, especially when he beats him to the phone in his mom's office.
Yeah, after and then shortly after, Thomas gives this big speech about how I know this house better, yes, than you, but clearly didn't in this, yes, one important moment.
Yes, it's like, well, obviously Santa must know it pretty well too, because he was able to head you off to the place you were trying to get to.
Oh, man. My broken bulb, and I'm like I said, I'm gonna bring it up again. As much as the soundtrack is so unique and so interesting, every time the like Happy Birthday Christmas starts up,
yes,
it takes me out of the movie. like it's funny. It's such a funny thing to just have in the middle of this, like, very serious moment. Yes. And I guess, you know, and maybe if the song was in French, it wouldn't impact me the same way. But it's the fact that it's this English language song.
I almost wonder if it works the same way that, because, you know, like, we hear foreign music in foreign languages we don't speak, and we're like, oh, that's a cool moving song, but we don't even know what it's saying. You know, it could be Happy Birthday Christmas.
True, for you're all right.
We know. I'm like, maybe it works the same way for a French audience. They're hearing an English song or whatever, and the tone of the music or whatever, and the way she's singing does sound sad.
Yeah, but it's this big kind of swelling, yes, thing. No, like, I think that's a good point.
So it's like, yeah, they're probably like, oh yes, it's a very sad English song. Meanwhile, we're over here, Merry, Merry Christmas.
The real question, though, is did the cop just stepping out? Because, like, that's funny on its own. The cop then stepping out, and it's just, let the midnight special shine its light on me. And I'm like, where the fuck is this coming from?
Yeah, that was really popular at that time. I don't know.
It had to be. We wasted our entire sound budget, yes, on this Bonnie Tyler song and
we spent, yeah,
30 seconds of Midnight Special.
We spent two of the $3 million on the soundtrack.
We gotta cut some corners here, guys.
Make Grandpa blind.
All right, Brilliant Bulb, the thing you want to praise.
You know, honestly, I want to praise Thomas. He's a great character, and so many kid-centered movies go so terribly wrong because the kid can't act or doesn't act believably, but he is such a good actor. He totally sells this whole, at the same time being his childlike innocence or whatever, of thinking, like, his crossbow dart trap and stuff are going to work and kill Santa or whatever, or, like, he's going to get him with the train bomb, stuff like that, where it's like, clearly this kid has, like, a high level grasp of concepts and is very smart, but he is still in that kid mentality of, you know, like, a train bomb will kill Santa that I made with marbles and a firecracker. But he also sells the fear so well. When he's, especially towards the end, when he has to shoot Santa, I love the part at the end too, where you could just see the horror and the color drain out of his face when he drops and he sees Grandpa shoot Santa.
Yep,
it's just excellent acting.
Or that scene where, like, he Grandpa's breathing and then he pulls away, yes, and you see Santa walk in the room behind him. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's so good,
such great acting. from him, and it's very rare you get that from a child actor.
My brilliant bulb. How well shot this is. This is
that is true.
This is like there's a great. I think there's a great like. It looks awesome. There's a great eye for detail. The models used are amazing. I would say this is just like visually a very, very impressive movie. Like it's so much fun just to kind of like look at the scenes and kind of look at the things they did. And, you know, and I think the first time I watched this, I was like, how did they do that aerial shot? Cause it doesn't look like a model when you see the thing. And like, there are things where it's like very clearly like, oh, you know, I think Thomas like escapes through the dumbwaiter and you're thinking like, oh, they didn't really have a way to shoot the dumbwaiter. So they kind of show like this wide open expanse, but it looks so interesting even when they do that. Just,
well, this is right around the cusp of when I know this is a, it's funny how people are so concerned now with AI generated art and AI animation taking artists' jobs away. But this was like at the tail end of us losing some of the greatest movie making crafts, in my opinion, set making, miniatures, doing those matte paintings for backgrounds and things. You see those all executed perfectly in this movie, all the practical effects that are used in this, and all that goes away. And
we get VFX.
Yes, we're T-minus in this movie about 3 years away from Jurassic Park and the CGI revolution.
Yep. No, it's truly just such an impressive like movie making, impressive. You know, this is kind of everything that like when I watch like an Argento movie, I kind of get the same feel. Like just such a great eye.
No, definitely a great director.
All right, well, listeners, you know where this is going, but every episode of Horror for the Holidays, we rate our movie one of three categories. Is it seasonally scary? Is it You'll Be Sorry? Or is it Ho 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 Hilarious? Jeff.
Well, I love the movie, Jay, but it's going to have to be You'll Be Sorry because it's French.
Oh, no. Didn't see that one coming.
It's seasonally scary. It's great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not the biggest fan of movies you have to read either, but this one is worth reading. I'll say that. It's got, like we talked about, great cinematography, great plot, great acting, one of the most legitimately creepy Santas that we've had. I mean, there's been scary Santas, but not, I would say, no Santa is as creepy as this Santa yet in any of the movies we've seen. And sells being genuinely like an unhinged psychopath as well as this Santa does.
I think that's very valid. For me, this is the best kind of ho-ho-ho hilarious. I don't know that Renee Manzor would be happy to hear me say that. I don't think he was trying to make a funny movie, but for me, this movie is scary, and everything you said, it's a creepy Santa. It's kind of a deranged, almost like weird subject matter, because it's clearly like Santa has some mental problems.
Weirdly brutal at times too.
But like the movie's just so funny. Like, yeah, once again, no. Bonnie Tyler just comes in, you know, freaking Pilou almost, you know, gets caught riding away on his bike. Just so many things where it's like, I don't know that this is supposed to be funny. And I think, and I do think there are things that are genuinely scary, but for me, it's just like, this is just such a fun, good time.
Yeah.
Watch a movie with a bunch of friends. And like, you can kind of laugh at the absurdity of the whole situation while still be, you know, almost kind of a reverse of like Return of the Living Dead, even though I think I also gave that one maybe a ho-ho-ho hilarious. But it's like, that movie's so funny, like, up front and, like, kind of in your face, where this one, it's more just like, watch this movie, like, kind of hang out, go see that. We saw this in a packed theater, and people were just laughing at all the funny, absurd moments. And it's just so perfect. Like, it's truly just, it is perfect just the way it is. Even though I think the song thing, whatever, like that still adds to the movie. That still makes it funny. Like it's just a perfect film.
That's the crazy thing about this movie. And every once in a while you get a movie like this, even elements come together and work in the context of the movie that on their face should not work. Like having Bonnie Tyler break into a random song in the middle of a movie about a killer Santa Claus stalking a boy through a house trying to kill him should not work.
Having a child be Rambo in his giant mansion, like, I don't know, kind of sounds dumb and silly. You know, we got later in the 90s, we got movies like that. Blank Check, Richie Rich. Mm-hmm. This is better than either of those.
having a blind diabetic grandpa wander through the house for the entire movie. Choices like that, it's just like, on there, if you read a script of this movie, you would probably be like, no, I'm not green lighting
no,
this.
No, this sounds stupid. But you watch the movie and you're like, no, it all works. It's all great just the way it is.
Yes.
The way Thomas is just a dick to his grandpa for 90% of the movie. Like,
this movie, I think, is the perfect example of more than the sum of its parts.
I think that's a perfect way to put it. I've said perfect a lot, but this movie deserves it.
I was going to say, if you're going to talk about perfect movies, this has got to be up there. If we're talking Christmas horror.
But Jeff, did you stop to think that maybe we're wrong? And it was hard. It was hard for me to find negative reviews.
Oh, it was not hard for me to find them, Jay. So I'll have some stuff to share.
But I found a couple.
Of course, I lurk in corners of the internet where Jay dare not tread.
So I couldn't even find like negative reviews on Reddit. There was a negative review that was kind of like, yeah, there were like some 4-star reviews or whatever. And I'm like, no, this isn't a 4-star movie. This is an 8, 9, 10-star movie. But I'm like, but even then, like, they weren't like negative. It was more the kind of thing where you and I will kind of be like, yeah, that's a, well, like that's kind of like you left that review, but that review's not a 1-star review. That's like a 4-star review. Like, these were like, oh, that's a 4, you put 4 stars, but I'm like, I think this is more like an 8-star, like 8, 7-star review. So in Reddit, I found a post where someone was like, I watched Deadly Games on Shudder last night. They're talking about, this is from last year around Christmas time, talking about watching it. And one review I have at the bottom of the thread says, ass. So there you go. Mm. There's a negative review I found, if you want to read one. And then I have one other from the same thread.
All right. Well, this one was on Pure Flicks, because, you know, I go to places, like I said, Jay wouldn't dare to tread.
Jeff, is that some kind of like the exact time stamp of like a naked woman on screen?
No, this is a Christian website saying whether movies are safe for their children to watch.
Oh, perfect. Oh, I love it. I didn't even think about that.
1 star, 0 stars if I could. Whoever marketed this trash as some French Home Alone should be sued for false advertising. I put this on thinking it would be quirky, maybe whimsical, and instead I got a psychotic hobo in a Santa suit stabbing a dog to death before creeping around a mansion trying to murder a child and his grandpa. I had to try to explain to my daughter why Santa was trying to strangle a 9-year-old boy with Christmas lights. Try having that conversation at bedtime.
I don't think that happened, but
I don't remember that either. But you know.
Clearly, they're making up plots to this movie.
This isn't edgy. It's child abuse on film. It's the cinematic equivalent of shoving a broken ornament into a kid's eye and calling it festive. If this is what the French think of Christmas, no wonder the rest of the world hates them and makes fun of them so much. 0 stars, 0 holiday spirit, 0 chance I'll ever watch this again. Do not recommend. Very graphic.
All right. So then the other one I have is, I saw this in the theater last week and I didn't get it. It was definitely beautifully shot. The exterior shots in particular gave the whole thing a whimsical / snow globe sort of feel that I really enjoyed, which I agree with that. But the majority of it just didn't resonate with me. I ended up feeling the most for the Santa. Until close to the end of the movie, I got the distinct impression that he was mentally unwell and didn't realize he was being threatening. Unless I missed something earlier, I didn't even think they established if he actually hurt the caretakers until the end. And then someone points out Santa slapped the child, killed a delivery driver, killed JR, you know, etc., which are all mentally unwell things to do, but a clear sign that he's a threat. And then, you know, tries to kind of justify... The person then responds, trying to kind of justify all of those things. And then misses, I believe, and I could be misremembering, that the delivery driver kill wasn't revealed until the end. And it's like, no. And then the person comes back, like, no, he's very clearly strangled on screen. Yeah. And it's like, oh, I just must have misremembered the whole thing then. Like, I do think you're supposed to kind of feel some sympathy for the killer Santa,
yeah.
But not to be like, well, he's clearly like, he's still killing people unnecessarily.
Yes, he's still a monster, even if he does have something wrong with him.
Yep. Both things can be true.
Yes. All right. This was from a blog called Cinema is Toilet Paper. 1 star. This is not horror. This is 90 minutes of a bratty French kid playing dress-up in Rambo paint and crawling through vents while nothing actually happens. When the killer Santa finally does show up, he looks like a sweaty mall Santa who lost his job at Macy's and wandered into the wrong movie. The kills are cheap, the suspense is non-existent, and the blood looks like ketchup from a McDonald's packet. They call this a hidden gem. It's hidden because it's garbage. If this movie had been buried any deeper, maybe it could have stayed where it belonged, in the bottom of a trash can in 1990. I'd rather watch paint dry on a gingerbread house than suffer through this dreck again.
They don't know how to have... Jeff, these people don't know how to have fun.
Apparently not.
I'm out, so if you have any others...
I put this on Shudder because it was being hyped as some lost Christmas classic.
Right, I think it was.
What I got was 90 minutes of pure agony. This movie is slower than molasses on a December morning. The tension is just endless scenes of a kid wandering through his house while fiddling with gadgets. The editing is choppy, the sound mix is amateur hour, and by the time the so-called climax hit, I wanted to gouge my eyes out with candy canes just to stay awake. You know what's scarier than this movie? My electric bill. You know what's gorier? Burning a frozen pizza. This is the kind of movie that makes you regret having a streaming subscription. I canceled Shudder halfway through just to punish them for even uploading this to their service.
Jeff, do people, like, maybe this is a symptom of, like, the kind of people who, like, can't look away from their phone while watching a movie. Like, is this a thing where, like, oh, the movie's slow, so it's boring? Like, lots of older movies are slow. Like, attention spans have certainly gone down recently. I don't want to be old man yells at cloud. But I do feel like so many more movies now, it's just constant action, action, action. Well, I watched Ghostbusters the other day. And, like, it had been a while since I'd seen it, but it was one of those things where it's like, I remember watching this as a kid and just kind of, like, zoning out during, like, the non-ghost-busting scenes.
Mm-hmm. Which is barely any of the movie, by the way.
But I was just kind of like, oh, whatever, like, you know, and I'm like, watching this, I'm like, oh, all the comedy's in this, like, all the comedy is in these parts.
Yeah.
And just had a blast with it, but it was one of those things where it's like, you know, as a kid, but I'm like, did a bunch of these people, like, have some kind of, like, arrested development, and they decide, like, they're like... They're still children when they watch movies, so they're like, if it's not just constant bombast on screen, the movie's bad.
I mean, like, I suppose that must be at least some segment of the population, because all these reviews can only point in that direction. Because
I think we had, like, the same thing for, like, Black Christmas 74, where it was just people being like, it's slow, it's boring. Like, you've read reviews. I don't think we did Close for Christmas during that section when we were back then.
Yeah.
But, like, I think a lot of the reviews you've read and we've done for that are just people talking about how boring the movie is. And it's like, do we not? I don't know. Like is it just that, like, no one has the attention span for good classic movies anymore? Like, because we have so much Marvel? I don't know. Like I said, I don't want to be old man yells at cloud, but it's kind of what I feel like right now.
All right, I got one final one. Every time I hear a critic gush about this film being a dark fairy tale, I feel like I've lost brain cells. What I actually watched was a neon-soaked fever dream that tries to pretend it has style while tripping over its own cliches. The cinematography looks like someone smeared Vaseline on the lens and drank an entire box of boxed wine. The pacing is so uneven you could use it as a torture device, and the acting, good lord, the acting. The little boy delivers every line like he's reciting a school play. And the menacing, quote-unquote, Santa looks like he's one drink away from falling over. This is not art or a hidden gem. It's not clever. It's a desperate knockoff of a slasher trying to convince you it has substance when all it really has is weird flashing gadgets and terrible soundtrack. Calling it a classic is an insult to the word classic. 0 stars for this movie, and negative stars for the critics who keep pretending it's worth rediscovering.
Go fuck yourself.
And that's all I had.
All right, Jeff. Well, let's take. I don't know, Père Noël. We'll just call him Père Noël. And put him on our naughty list. My thought was, even though I think as you lovingly refer to him as Brooklyn Santa,
yeah,
I do think maybe around Brooklyn Santa level, above Brooklyn Santa.
I was going to suggest that. I was saying he's probably around that level, although I think probably like one step above him would be appropriate because I think he could probably beat Brooklyn Santa.
Like, yeah, Brooklyn Santa's such like a schlub.
Yeah.
And, you know, needs two people. And kind of similar in plot, I would say, to
a little bit.
To All a Good Night? Yeah, to All a Good Night. Like, very kind of similar, I think, kind of vibe, stalking through a large house. I think there's suit of armor related stuff, crossbow related stuff. But yeah, I mean, they needed two people to execute that. This is one creepy, menacing Santa. One
creepy, crazy guy. So yeah, I think a little bit above the Brooklyn Santa duo.
All right. Sounds good to me. Jeff, we got an email, so it's time for this.
Oh, no.
Garbage day!
Huh?
No!
Email titled, Jeff, this email comes from our number one fan. If you want to get in touch and kick Spencer off his throne, horrorfortheholidays@gmail.com.
Good luck.
Catching up. Hey, Jay and Jeff. Fat Boy Summer is over, and it's less than a month until the 2025 Horror for the Holidays Spooktacular.
It is.
Life is great. I had a full left hip replacement at the end of June. I had my right one done almost 4 years ago. Hey, good on you, Spencer. My mom got her hip replaced, and I know that rehab can be real difficult. Yeah, so
that's rough.
So I spent July recovering and August traveling with my whole family. We were in Ireland and Cape May, New Jersey, and had a blast. Awesome. I still have Guinness and Jameson Irish whiskey coursing through my veins. I was unable to listen to the podcast since I prefer to listen in my car while I'm working and running running errands, so there aren't any interruptions, and now I'm catching up and loving every minute of it. Loving every minute of it. Fuck anyone who doesn't love The Return of the Living Dead. It's a fucking classic, and any normie that takes issue with it can go back to watching Downton Abbey and Love Island, and if they happen to be horror fans, they lost their membership card and all privileges accorded with it.
I agree.
I'm a huge Linnea Quigley fan, and Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers changed my life when it was released when I was 16. Hells yeah.
Oh yeah.
I told her so when I met her at the Mahoning Drive-In during Joe Bob's inaugural drive-in jamboree back in 2021. I got his and Darcy's autograph as well. And I could name 20 other movies that were better because she was in them. Hey, I get you.
I get it. Yeah. I agree.
So anyone who says different, I will rate a 1 out of 1, but a 0 if I could. I'm currently rereading The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings for the fifth time, and Jeff is 100% correct in his summation and defense against the Song of Ice and Fire crowd. I read these books, and they bend the knee to Lord of the Rings. Well, there are a ton of movies hitting Shudder over the next 2 months for our Halloween, including Dangerous Animals this Friday, which I can't wait for. I've not seen it. Dangerous Animals looks awesome.
I do want to see that.
That plus the Silent Night, Deadly Night remake coming out in December means that these are halcyon days for us horror fans. Carry on, you guys, and for the love of God, get Simon Phillips to join you for an episode. That would be fucking epic.
Oh, if only.
I don't know, Spencer, I'm right here.
He's already been here several times.
I mean, he's always with us in spirit, certainly. Your number one fan, Spencer.
Indeed, our number one fan, and some would say our only fan.
Yep, right? Our only fans. Wait, that's something different.
No, not that again.
No, we do have other fans, and we appreciate all of them, but yes, thank you for the nice email, Spencer, and because it's garbage day, it's going straight in the trash can.
Because
that's why it's garbage day. Also, it's time to shove crap in our mouths, because the rules don't apply, and I do what I want.
Oh, boy. But yes, thank you, Spencer. Good to hear you're recovering well. Glad you had a fun trip with your family.
Oh, yeah. If people want to see, Spencer sent a couple pictures. One was the Horror for the Holidays card or logo in front of like the Blarney Castle.
Nice.
So, you know, said he was looking for leprechauns trying to
get
his gold back.
Getting ready for next St. Patrick's Day, huh?
And then also sent one from wherever the Iowa State K-State game was in Ireland. With the Iowa State logo in the background.
Nice.
But then also in Ireland. I thought that was really good. It was like three levels of inception because, Jeff literally lives minutes from Iowa State.
Yes, I do.
And Iowa State won that game.
It's both a blessing and a curse.
Anyway, Joe Bob Cooler.
The Joe Bob Cooler. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. How did I know? I saw those the other day in the store, and I'm like, that's good J-Logs tonight if I've ever seen one.
Jeff, we got things that are other things, and then one additional thing.
Oh, okay.
We've got Reese's flavored Oreos.
Ah, yes, of course.
And we've got Oreo flavored Reese's.
Good God. You've gone mad.
And we've got marshmallow flavored Butterfingers. I just dropped yours. Like, we got marshmallow flavored Butterfingers? And we got Butterfinger flavored. No, we don't.
That would have been.
We got ice cream sundae flavored root beer.
Of course.
And we've also got Maverick exclusive Honey Dew Mountain Dew.
Oh, no.
Fucking Maverick.
Killed, come and go.
Yep. Speaking of which, Krauss Group headquarters, or like come and go headquarters, was downtown. Krauss also owns the soccer team Parma, which is located in Italy.
Ah.
And West Ham wanted to sign the goalkeeper from Parma this summer. Didn't manage to do it. But I was like, I was posting in like a group I'm in. I'm like, I saw this morning, and you know, Krauss Group headquarters is here. If you guys need me to, I'll go down and protest out front.
I like the retro packaging on the Oreos.
Yeah, it's really cool.
A&W Ice Cream Sundae. That'll be interesting.
All right, let's do.
What are you going to do first?
Let's do Reese's flavored Oreos and Oreo flavored Reese's.
Okay. See which one got it better. And it's going to be Oreo, but we'll humor them for a minute.
Yeah, we'll humor the losers at Reese's.
Oh, boy. Splitting a king size, folks. Really big. Huge, even.
Huge. King size. Made for a king, but Jeff and I will eat one by ourselves just fine.
Exactly.
Is it a king size because kings are fat? Is that the joke? They're gluttonous?
I always assume so.
It's a Reese's cup with Oreo cookie in the bottom.
Yeah.
It's not bad. And like, I kind of like that crunchy texture.
I don't hate
the Reese's cup.
Yeah, I don't hate it, but I mean, it's nothing crazy.
It needed to do something to like imitate the cream.
Mm-hmm.
The white stuff, as I believe what New Kids on the Block called it.
Oh yeah.
All right, let's do the one that we know will taste just like what it's supposed to be.
Indeed. Here we go. Peanut butter Oreo filled with Reese's peanut butter.
Jeff, I'm gonna say it. I think a rare miss from the psychos at Oreo.
Yeah. Not really getting much peanut butter flavor. I don't know if that's Oreo's fault or if that's Reese's fault, but because their products have kind of been going downhill the last few years.
Reese's, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I would say the Reese's flavored Oreo, even though neither of them, I think, taste like the other thing. Mm-mm. I would say the Reese's flavored Oreo is way better. I don't know about you. My cookie almost tasted like it was burnt.
Kind of. They got a bad batch. I don't know.
I don't know. But yeah, this is unimpressive, and I'm disappointed in the Oreo company. Nabisco. Yeah,
I'm sad. I'm really not impressed with either one.
Well, like, gun to my head, I think I would do. I would get the Reese's Oreo cup, again
instead. But yeah, I honestly probably wouldn't get either.
Or no, the Oreo Reese's. What? Yeah. God damn it! This is also convenient. The Reese's cup that has Oreo stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Butterfinger marshmallow.
Here we go. So is it marshmallow instead of chocolate?
That's what it looks like.
Weird, but okay. I'll allow it.
Listeners, I'm sorry if you can hear Cassie barking up a storm somewhere.
It just tastes like a Butterfinger. Getting a tiny bit of marshmallow.
I certainly wouldn't call that flavor marshmallow. I don't know what I would call that. I don't think I would call whatever it is marshmallow flavored.
No. It's almost like somebody took like a hint of that artificial marshmallow flavor from like the S'mores Pop-Tart and put it in white chocolate.
It's just not.
But I mean, it tastes like peanut butter, like a Butterfinger does.
All right, well, let's try this ice cream sundae A&W. You would think like, oh, ice cream and A&W, it'll taste like,
should go together,
should be like a root beer float or something. Let's give it a try. Instantly, it smells like chocolate. I don't like that.
No, honestly, I don't hate it.
I don't like that chocolate taste. That's not for me.
It's very Yoo-hoo. Are you a Yoo-hoo guy?
I do like Yoo-hoo. I don't like that. It reminds me, last year Liquid Death did a, I think I mentioned this, they did the hot fudge sundae flavored Liquid Death.
Yeah.
I wasn't a fan of that either. I don't know if it's just like the chocolate that I could see that being good. That is not made for me.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I probably wouldn't buy it like to drink or whatever normally, but I don't hate it.
All right, last thing. Let's get some Mountain Dew Honeydew.
All right, here we go.
Honey, don't. That's going to be my review if it's bad. So stay tuned if that's what I'm going to say.
Smells good. Smells fresh.
Ooh, it smells like Mountain. You know, they always say like it's dew with X flavor or whatever. Mm-hmm. This smells like dew with like, I would almost say instead of honeydew, I've not tasted it yet. But if it smells like dew mixed with the cucumber Gatorade, that's kind of like the smell I'm getting.
A little bit, yeah. I like that.
I'm going to say it, Jeff. Honey, do buy this again.
Yes. I was going to say, I would drink this.
No, this is actually really tasty. Hey, for once we got a local exclusive Mountain Dew that actually tastes pretty good. Take that, Casey's, with your shitty overdrive.
I think this might be the first time ever that a Mountain Dew has went up against an Oreo and beat an Oreo.
I agree. What wild halcyon days are we living in?
Exactly. See, Spencer called it. We're living in revolutionary times.
Yep. It's
unprecedented.
Unprecedented.
Dogs and cats living together.
Utter chaos. All right. Probably bottom. I think I would do the Butterfingers.
Honestly, I would probably, if we're ranking all the items, I'd probably put the ice cream sundae A&W at the bottom.
Okay. Oh, yeah. No, I might put that at the bottom, too. Yeah. And then I think I would do the Reese's flavored Oreos.
Yep. And then I'd probably do the Butterfinger because, I mean, it's not what it says, but it's not bad. It's a Butterfinger.
Yep. And then the Butterfinger, and then the Oreo flavored Reese's.
Yes. I would say that's probably accurate for me, too.
But yeah, I might keep sipping on this Honeydew.
Yeah. I think the Mountain Dew Honeydew's got the top spot for me for sure.
And also the, if you notice, the O in Honeydew has a little dissected Honeydew with the little seeds and stuff.
Yeah, so I'm liking that they're adding in those little Easter eggs to the logos for the flavors.
And then, I don't know, it looks like a barrel going over Niagara Falls or something on the logo. Yep. I don't know what that has to do with Honeydew, but sure, why not?
I don't know.
Was it from their moonshining days back when Mountain Dew was a mixer for moonshine?
Could be.
Pew, pew. Dew shine. Pew, pew, pew.
You know what I miss? Back when Fairway had their store brand Mountain Dew that was called Hillbilly Holler.
Oh man, don't think I ever got to participate in those yeah, great days.
So you never indulged in the Hillbilly Holler?
What's Hy-Vee's? Hee Haw.
Yes, Hee Haw. Yeah,
Hee Haw is inferior to Mountain Dew. I'm not a Hee Haw fan. All right, well, I don't know, fairly successful garbage day. An email read.
Successful. We got an email from our number one fan, Spencer. Thank you again for that. A rare Mountain Dew win lately. I've been a lot of sad dews lately, but this one actually pulled it out.
I read the dews today. Oh, boy. I don't know.
Like we said, crazy days. Miss from Oreo, win from Dew.
Yep.
Yes, you know, you never know what you're going to get. And, of course, we're barreling towards the spooktacular at an alarming rate.
If you want to get in touch with us, be part of Garbage Day, not try to knock Spencer off of his perch, become the new number one fan, horrorfortheholidays@gmail.com. Get in touch with us on social media. We are all the places. We are at Horror for Holidays. That is Horror, the number four, Holidays.
Well, Spencer has a 3-year lead on you, so good luck catching up with you. YouTube.com/horrorfortheholidays. Hit the subscribe button. Thumbs up. Leave us comments there. They're easy to read, easy for us to respond to you quickly if you have a question or a suggestion. We're on all the podcatchers. You leave us 5-star reviews, 0 stars if you could, so you could prove you're a real sicko that actually listens to the show.
Tell a friend, right? That's the other thing.
That's the big thing.
You know, as much as liking, subscribing, hitting the bell,
it all helps.
All that shit helps. The best way to spread word about a podcast is to tell somebody you like about the podcast if you think they would also like it.
Indeed. That's always the best way. And another great way to help us and other shows is to check out the Christmas Podcast Network.
Yep, there's gonna be a Halloween episode coming up soon that that yours truly will be on.
A couple of local fat guys.
Yep. So yeah, got that to look forward to over on Totally Rad Christmas. But you know, there's also others. There's Closer to Christmas. There's Advent Calendar House. There's Sounds of Christmas. There's Holly Jolly Xmas. All sorts of good stuff out there. Go give them a listen. They're arguably better than this one. I don't think there's going to be dogs barking in the background.
Probably not, no. And you know what, Jay? We can proudly say that when Jerry D. put out the call for two Midwestern fat slobs to talk about a Wisconsin movie, we answered.
Yep, and we were there, and we told our own local Iowa lore about our own Christmas traditions in Iowa as opposed to their Christmas traditions in Wisconsin.
Yes, yes. Indeed.
And, I don't know. We talked about masturbating and shit, too. So all sorts of great stuff.
No, Jay. That was never discussed. We only talked about blood beating.
Oh, you're right.
Uh-oh. Doo-doo-doo.
All right, yeah.
Little teaser for you.
Anyway, we will, next week, we will be on the road. We will be your stocking stuffer. We'll, hopefully, fingers crossed, be Jeff and me, and Jeff's wife on occasion, driving up and down from Des Moines. Well, me from Des Moines. I'll pick Jeff and his wife up in Ames, and we'll go all the way up to Minneapolis to visit one Matt Dupay at, Crypticon, Minneapolis. We'll hang out with him. We'll try to record some stuff while we're there. I'm just going to try to record on my phone. So I know people love the audio quality that we already put out. It's going to be even worse.
You know, I'm going to look into maybe finding us. If they're not super expensive, we could get some lav mics we could clip to our shirts that will record to your phone.
Okay.
I think that might work.
All right. Yeah, we'll take a look into that. And then we will take a week off after that.
Because we got to get ready for Spooktacular.
We got to get ready for the Spooktacular and the first movie, The Spooktacular. I'm going to reveal it here. Everyone already knows. I think it's going to be What Happens Next Will Scare You. WNUF 1.5.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then the year after it'll be Trick or Treat with Reed Richmond. But anyway, What Happens Next Will Scare You.
God, you can see so far into the future.
And then, I don't know, we'll go from there. I'll add that, Halloween 4, Terrifier 2.
All the stuff. We're doing all the sequels. We got sequels for
Pumpkinhead 3, and then we've still got to find one a fifth other movie.
Oh, Jay, I'll talk about it off air so as not to spoil it, but I think I may have found the perfect thing.
All right, sounds good. So, listeners, all that to look forward to. But like I said, next week, Jeff and I are going to be experimenting with recording live while on the road, so we'll see what happens.
Indeed.
Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.